looking for beavers. All right.
Oh, I feel like a Power Ranger.
Hey, you see that?
My dick's asleep.
That is exactly what the beavers would want.
That's right. You're back on Beaver Rodeo. We are your hosts, George and
Jen.
You're right, Jen?
Yeah.
Did you forget we were doing a show today?
No, I'll never not fuck up that intro, but go ahead and continue to do your thing.
We are very, very lucky today to have some friends from another fellow podcast, which if you're not listening to, you're lucky I can't find you during this quarantine because I'd smack you for not listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
They are our boys over at the Launchpad Podcast. They talk about freaking geek stuff, movie stuff, special effects stuff. There isn't enough stuff that they don't talk about. Please give a hand to Matt and Aaron.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, guys?
Thanks for having
us on. Golf clap.
All right. I mean, we're super bummed to be here. Yeah. We love like just interacting with other podcasts, and it's so cool that you guys are doing your own, like starting this up. I mean, we've interacted with you with Famous Monsters, but I'm super pumped that you doing your own podcast now, and you know, it's been super cool. I saw the video game one where you're talking about, you know, the gaming stuff that you guys do, and a sexy one that was kind of funny.
Love
that's
that
been our highest rated episode.
Rumi, I love that you think sexy is funny. Like that's your go-to for that. Yeah, that sexy thing was funny. I'm imagining like all your anniversaries, your wife just keeps facepalm.
sometimes if you don't laugh, you cry, man. So I'd rather take the thumb over. Severely depressing.
I heard somewhere tears are good for lube. I don't know.
This is like what, the fifth or sixth time we've chatted with George on a podcast?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I think this is the first time we've been on again, though.
Yeah. I don't do this often. Ever.
Really?
I'm still surprised that you agreed to do this, to
and, be honest. I am too sometimes. I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah.
I don't love you that much.
Okay.
Oh, wow. But anyways, what are we talking about today?
I guess it's not love. Well, with today's topic, I could think of no better two guys than you guys because you are collectors and geeks to your heart just as much as we are. Mm. And growing up, I think we all had a fascination for the world of comic books and the collector's mentality and hobby that encompassed that. Now, Jen, of course, you came to it a lot later, but mm-hmm. I think I can guarantee for the three of us, it was single digits. Like, we were little chibits of chibits. Little chibits. You know, just getting paper cuts and flipping through pictures and pictures of Spider-Man, Batman, and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As we've gotten older, it hasn't stopped, obviously. The collecting still continues. It's changed, but it's still there.
Yeah.
But I'm curious towards, like, for how you guys, how it's affected your lives. You know, like, do you remember what the first comic book was that you even collected? Like, what was the first one that got you into the hobby?
Oh, damn.
I do. Okay. So this was a Fantastic Four comic book. I was sick. I was home from work. And I was home from work. I'm like I was sick. I was home from school. We went to the drugstore and they had a comic book rack. And there was, you know, a bunch of comic books. And there was a Fantastic Four comic book there. I was like, that looks interesting. What the heck is that? On the front, it was a recreation of the famous, like, This Be the End Galactus. And I picked it up, and it's like Fantastic Four, like $2.95 or something like that. And I picked it up, and I'm reading it. And at the end of the comic, they die. And I ran to my mom. I was like, Mom, they killed them. They killed them. It's like, over. They killed them. And my mom looks at me and goes, like, there'll be another issue next week. It's not like they're ending the comic series. And I was like, what? I had no idea that you could just keep players alive, like comic book characters alive forever. So, you know, a little time went by and I started collecting and I was like, whoa, I got to find out what happens. Wait, I got to find out what happens before this. And I just started collecting Fantastic Four like nobody's business. and had a pretty massive, like, 100, 150 issue run that was consecutive.
Nerd.
I can't remember the number of the issue.
That's cool, man. Brag about that. Well, Rumi, you know my whole thing with comic books growing up, right?
You bet I do.
Yeah. Rumi hates this because I see a million times. It's the benefits of being roomies and being co-hosts on a show where we always talk about nerdy shit. But growing up, I actually wasn't a big comic book guy. I had a bunch, but I didn't really follow them and I wasn't really into it specifically, at least superhero stuff. I'd get them here and there, but my jam growing up was like Aliens, Predator, and Terminator movies. I love those movies so much. When I found out that Dark Horse, this is like late 80s, early 90s, Dark Horse had those franchises, those licenses. They were making some really bitchin' comics. And they were like PG-13 / a light R. So it was like a lot of killing, a lot of blood, bad words. And I loved those books so much, especially Predator.
You son of a bitch.
The downside / I guess it wasn't downside because I didn't care. I would never get like a full run of anything. Even like the Predators were like minis. They were like four issues, sometimes two issues. I'd get those. But like four issues, I'd always have like one, two, and four. So I would never get like the whole story. And like just that's how it was growing up. And I still have most of those issues. The superhero stuff was catch as catch can. I got whatever. But it is cool. I see, I have a picture of me when I was probably about two or three. I could figure it out by looking at the years, but I have there's an issue of the first Secret War, more Secret Wars, the first big Marvel crossover event. I had the issue where Magneto was prominently on the cover. I had a picture of me with that as a kid. And I thought, now as a huge comic book nerd, I love that shit nonstop. Now I didn't get into it till I was working on I Am Legend. So I think it was like 2006, 2007. And that's when I started getting like, oh shit, comic books are cool.
You guys are lucky you can't hear my eye roll. But like Rumi and I were roommates at the time, and when he started getting into comics, he started buying like the fanciest, best hardback edition you can, the most collected books that we could. And I would always come in his room and steal comic books to read because he always had like the big like trade paperbacks and like the full collections and the fancy art books. And he started going ham. Even when we were roommates, he started collecting comic books because when we were roommates, he went off to do I Am Legend and left his comic book collection to me.
Oh, I didn't think of that, dude, that you were there like when I started that.
Dude,
like when I started getting into that.
You read Batman Long Halloween and they're like, Rumi, you got to read this. Look at this. Look at this art. Look how they did this. I love it. And we just passed off Long Halloween back and forth. And that was awesome. And I remember we kept having jokes about being like the name Jeff Leob.
Yeah, but I, you know, growing up, I didn't collect comics, but I was big into Star Wars and I was big into Star Wars toys, even as like a, you know, a 10, 11 year old kid. I'd be trying to wheel and deal for Star Wars toys at garage sales and comic book stores, like wherever you could find them. So like that was my jam growing up, was collecting those specifically Star Wars toys.
Yeah, and it's always somewhere. It's either going to be the books or definitely the figures, for sure.
They got you one way or the other.
Yeah, right.
What did you guys, what was your main jam as when you were younger? When did you get into it?
I guess I'll hit this up because you were definitely older.
I think I picked up a comic book the same time that Matt did in 2006. That's why I met you.
Yeah. Yeah, because for me, like, I had to, actually, when I was putting this all together, I always recall my first comic books being around 9, 10 years old. And my uncle, who lived in Colorado, mailed me a bunch of comic books. Whoa. So this is my first set, as far as I could remember. So he sent me like Batman, Detective Comics, The Flash, and some Marvels like Avengers and Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, as I was doing this, it hit me. It's like, holy shit, I have actually had comic books since before that. Because when I was like 5 years old, my cousin had comic books. And he didn't want them anymore, and he gave them to me. So I had actually like King Conan, Conan the Barbarian, and The Nam, which was a war comic book based on the Vietnam in the 80s. And I started really thinking back. It's like, wait a second. In the back of that book, too, it had the very first time they were introducing the solo Wolverine comic book. And this is the one where he's wearing just like a sleeveless black shirt.
Yeah.
And he's just standing over a pile of dead bodies. Oh. And this was the first time I discovered who Wolverine was.
Oh.
I didn't know about the X-Men yet.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy's a badass. Like, he has blades in his hands and he just killed a bunch of dudes. Like, you don't get to do that in cartoons. Yeah. You know? So those were like my first introductions to actually owning comic books, besides my mother actually telling me stories of when she had Spider-Man and Hulk comic books and like Archie's, and then the dreaded day where her mother threw them all out because she felt she was too old for them. And this is where it's heart-wrenching for me, because my mother had like the old Amazing Spider-Man, like the first 10 issues, where everything matters. It's like, those could have been mine.
Yeah. Right? My parents were obsessed with Conan the Barbarian, and my mom would do like screen print Conan shirts. And then we had Red Sonja and Conan comics in the basement. And like reading that stuff, probably even before I bought Fantastic Four, like those, you know, I didn't really get the comic books. And a lot of it was like, oh, she's not wearing enough clothes. Boring. You know, I wasn't old enough to be like, whoa. Chainmail bikini, like, was not old enough for that, but
I no longer wish to know you. You give bottom dwellers a bad name.
You know, it definitely ran in the family, the interest in art, and I think that's where it came from. My mom was an art teacher, and you know, we were always surrounded by art, so I think cool art is what grabs you into something like that. And like I said, like seeing this Fantastic Four issue with the really cool, like very grabbing cover, like that's what draws you in. Like you said, the Wolverine, like that grabbed you in because you're like, whoa, what is he doing? He killed a bunch of dudes. What's going on here? And that kind of stuff, I think as a kid, that's what grabs you in, is you'll see a cover or you'll see an image and it makes you go, I need to find out more about that.
Dude, the next time I talk to your mom, yeah, I'm going to say, Mrs. Aaron, what is best in life?
Oh, that's great. She gave me a shirt once that had a Venn diagram with the Conan sword in the middle. And it had all the, like, what is best in life? To defeat my enemies, see them driven before me, and hear the lamentation of their women. And like, that was just a Venn diagram with the sword awesome. In the middle. I was like, cool, cool.
That's cool. Nice.
So, Jen, what is the book then that got you into this? Because obviously, yes, meeting me
was the
downward spiral to this situation.
But like, speaking of like, just going back to what you guys were saying about art and being drawn in, like to like comics in the newspaper count?
Calvin and Hobbes.
I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that counts. Yeah.
Because I got something to add to that.
I got something to add to that. So go ahead.
I mean, if that counts, then that would be it. Like, my family always had, we had like the newspaper delivery every day. And so I'd always flip to the comic pages. And at first it was just to do the crossword puzzle that I couldn't do because I don't know anything. I'm a kid. And then, you know, just looking at all of the artwork and like Garfield and Family Circus, and I can't remember anything else.
Crankshaft.
Don't remember any of that. But the one that I was drawn to was like this stupid dramatic one that
Brenda Starr?
Yeah. And it's because it's drawn differently. It's, you know, it's everything else is very cartoony and, you know, very, you know, child friendly, I guess.
But she was traditional.
Yeah, this was a traditional art. And that's what drew me in. I was like, what is this? And I'm reading about this story that is super dramatic that I don't even know what's going on anymore because I am too young.
Brenda Starr was a reporter. She was like a Lois Lane character. It's like, what if Lois Lane had her own story? That was Brenda Starr.
Where was that? That's what, because every like region has their own like boring cartoon strip that nobody knows what's going on, like the soap opera.
Yeah.
we had Rick Morgan. Where were you guys where Brenda Starr existed?
We're from Massachusetts.
Yeah.
The Midwest had Rex Morgan.
What's Rex Morgan?
He's a doctor. And there's always stuff going wrong. It's so goofy.
It's like Trapper John, MD.
Oh, yeah. It was like just diagnoses murder or some shit. Just like he was always trying to figure out what was going on. But like you couldn't follow it because it didn't give me enough story. It gave me like four panels at a time. And he's like, I told you it wouldn't work. And then cut to a frame of a woman with like one tear going down her cheek. Not for lube.
He's like, what didn't work? These panels?
Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah, yeah.
One tier was not for lube.
But Jen, like, you bring up this point, though, which I think is very good at the newspaper.
Yeah.
Comic books.
Yeah.
I actually put a note for myself because there was a comic book that I actually there was a comic strip that I was that I actually collected before I was into comic books.
Collected, like you cut it out? Or
no, I didn't have to cut it out because it came as a full-on strip on its own. And this was the Bazooka Joe comic strips.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I used to collect all of them because my mom actually still had some and she gave them to me. And I don't know if people remember this, but the first of all, Bazooka Joe was a gum.
Yeah.
And the gum would come with a comic strip. And it was a tiny little, like, 1 by 1 inch or whatever. It was very small. But some of them would actually have like this little, like a buyer's guide for it. And you get like a decoder ring or x-ray glasses, very much like the comic books would have back in the day. And I saved up hundreds of these things to get myself a decoder ring. And I got it. Where it is now,
Time took is an interesting character because isn't he a child with an eye patch?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a pirate, the cool pirate kid, but he's not a pirate. He's just this cool kid.
He's the kid who got the Red Ryder rifle and shot his eye out.
How old is he? I never thought of that. How old is he?
I think when I was collecting it, he may have already been a teenager because I had, thanks to my mom, like I had hers and mine, and he grew up over the ages. When she had it, he was a kid.
Oh.
Like he was a little like elementary school kid.
Yeah.
And then when I got it, he was a teenager.
He had the patch the whole time.
But he always had the eye patch.
Oh, so they actually aged him?
Yeah. So now he's probably an old man.
No, George, he's dead now.
R.I.P. Bazooka Joe.
He at the very least doesn't have his own teeth. You can't chew that much pink bubble gum and keep your teeth.
It'd be very interesting to find out who wrote those. Could you imagine it was the same guy for 60 years just writing Bazooka Joe?
Oh, my God.
How hilarious would that be?
It's just the story of his life.
He's got an eye patch. Oh, man.
I remember getting the gum, too, but I don't know why we would get it, too, because you'd chew it, like, twice, and then you'd lose flavor immediately. Yeah.
Oh, it was horrible gum. It's terrible. It was the worst. It's like
we get it all the time.
It's like even chewing the cover of baseball cards. You know what I mean? It's the worst gum you'd ever have.
You could break your teeth on baseball card gum.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because you never knew when you got that stuff. And, like, I remember we went to this, like, baseball card shop and just bought a bunch of packs. I don't know why. I wasn't even into baseball. I couldn't tell you any of those players. But we were like, let's you know, one of my friends wanted to do it, so fine. So we got a bunch of baseball cards, and there was gum in it. He goes, dare you to eat it. And I was like, it's gum. Fine. Crunch. Oh, glass in my mouth. Like shards of pink glass in my mouth. Got blood all over some card named Mickey Mantle? I don't know. Whatever. We threw it all in the trash.
I'm so glad that joke's not true.
What joke?
It's like, if I didn't know how old you were, that would have sucked.
Well, the only reason I know that that's a joke is because my dad has a really nice Mickey Mantle card that was like mounted in glass in our house. And it was like, yeah, not messing with that. So all my baseball jokes refer to that one card that I saw.
So now we've uncovered our comic book origins of how we got into the hobby, even though I guess we haven't really. I guess Jen was newspaper clippings.
Newspaper clippings. And then you. And then it was, that it was just your fault.
I like that. How is it now taken form in your life? Like, how has it affected it? Has it shaped who you are? Has it affected the choices you've made, per se?
Every day. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, because here's the thing you got to figure out. You got to figure out how to create a revenue stream that you can, I don't want to say hide because that sounds like you're lying, but not have tied to your main bank account. So your wife isn't like, did you spend $200 on some bullshit? And you're like, no. But I have a PayPal account that all my transactions and trades and sales and stuff I do on the side, like I'll do, because I'm a VFX artist, so I'll do graphics on the side. And if I design a logo and somebody pays me like $200, I put that in my PayPal account and I hold on to that to buy garbage with. Like it's completely created a secret lifestyle that you have to maintain so that you aren't like imposing on your significant other. I mean, you guys are lucky because you probably collect together, but my wife's like, no, I don't want, how many NECA toys can you have? We don't need, how many Xenomorphs do you have? And I'm like, I don't have this one.
Not enough.
Like, how many Xenomorphs do you need? All of them? But this one is painted like the Joker, honey. Come on.
My wife just, I was going to buy a Lego set, like a custom-made Lego set, where you could make your own lightsaber, like the handle of a lightsaber, and it would be a one-to-one scale. And my wife was like, that's stupid because you won't use it. And I was like, what do you mean use it? Like as a Jedi? She's like, no, you won't play with it. You won't display it. I was like, you won't let me display it. She's like, well, it's a lightsaber, but you how many lightsabers do you already have and you don't use them? And I was like, I don't understand if you understand collecting, and what would you want me to be doing? Like vanquishing the Sith? She's like, no, it's just I couldn't understand what her criticism was. And I think that the essence of it is she's not a collector and she doesn't understand the need that I think we all have to obtain, even if you never see it again. Like I collect, you know, original comic art and I have probably close to 100 pieces. And there, a lot of them are in folders that I don't look at very often, but I know that I have them and it makes me happy when I do look at them. And she's like, I guess, I don't know, she wants to look at them every day or she wants me to fucking wave a Lego lightsaber around.
No, Ruby, you got to go to her and be like, honey, I figured it out. I'm going to make the Lego lightsaber get a job and he's going to be supporting the family. So it works, right? We can get it, right?
It's funny because I was making my dinner to scarf down right before I got on this call, my wife was like, She never asks about our podcast, but she knew that we were going on George's. So she was like, what are you guys going to talk about tonight? I said, oh, George had this cool idea about how you kind of be a collector and also have a family and stuff at the same time. And she goes, oh, so he's going to title it How Not to Piss Off Your Wife.
I don't know.
She actually had some good things that I didn't even think of. But like one thing that we do, so I said I collect original comic art and I have pieces that I've bought for like literally $30 and I have pieces that I've literally bought for maybe the most expensive piece was $5,500, so like 5,000, you know, upwards of $5,000. But what I'll do is I've never paid that much for a piece and I always make these bitchin' deals where, you know, I did special effects for so long. I have these props. I have these one-of-a-kind things. I'll either sell those or trade those at like a really good profit. Then I'll factor that back into my next deal and then I'll roll that into another deal. So there's been times where like I'll buy a piece of art that's really expensive, but I know someone else wants it and they have something else that I want that's more expensive than what I paid for that. And sometimes I'll double or triple down on that. So like Rumi will have a piece that I ultimately want. George will have a piece that I know Rumi wants and I'll be able to get a piece that I know George wants. So I'll pay like $500 and end up ultimately through some trades with like a $3,500 piece. Like I'm doing that right now. And Amanda, my wife, has been cool with that. She calls it comic book money because most of that money comes from, like Rumi said, the revenue stream is my nerd hobby now. Once in a while, I'll clear out something. I just cleared out like $400 of the 1990s Power of the Force Star Wars action figures where I was like, do I really need these? And then I like looked up the prices. You can't get shit for them. But like I had so many of them. I don't know, a ton of them for $6 each. And if I ever want those again, they're on eBay in mass. So I can always get them back.
In mass. You know how many of those I have in package? You know how many Queen Amidala's I have? Because I was like, ooh, all those different costumes they sell her? Yeah, all those different costumes. Oh, man, this movie's going to be great. How many Jar Jar Binkses can I buy? This guy's going to be the next Jabba the Hutt. So cool. Nope. What a waste of time.
Well, it sounds like we all have very similar things because I have my own set
you
of
do the
rules.
Same thing,
yeah. Like it's definitely it's a side hustle.
Yeah.
So
for me, my comic book collecting over the past 10 years has morphed where like I still collect my comic books. I'm right now looking at 30 plus short boxes of comic books behind me.
And a very understanding and supportive wife next to you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But the reason it works out is because like I've gotten into now collecting statues from like Sideshow and Prime One. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those are not cheap statues. It's like 500 to over 1,000. Like I have a piece that's over $1,000. But I didn't pay $1,000 for that thing. I ended up like my thing is if I want to get something new that's a comic book or a statue, I have to sell something old. Yeah. So everything I'm getting, it's all paid from the collection.
Yeah.
I never use a paycheck whatsoever to ever get anything I want.
Yeah, you're just rotating out basically.
Yeah.
Because we also don't have the space to accumulate more than what we have.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm always mindful of my space too.
I feel like that's kind of a very adult decision. And I guess also for stuff like that that you guys do, and this isn't just for George, even though he just said it, but I think I would love to hear what we all do or what we all think about this, but do you guys, is that part of the collecting, part of the hunt for you? Like for me, getting that deal and making that work is when it works. Sometimes I do like these friggin' gigantic deals that I'm like proud of. And I think I'm freaking super cool that I got it to work. Or, you know, like I create these cool relationships and then you double down, you go back and you have a relationship with a guy who next time will hook you up with something because he knows that you like such and such and you had such a good deal last time that he kept you in mind. Like that's like the thrill of the hunt for me. Like part of that, I love that, you know?
Well, I will say that.
Oh, for sure. I think that's a big part of it. This,
like collecting, a big part of collecting, and especially why nerds especially get into collecting and get roped into this, is there's a strange feeling that if you don't support the things that you love, like then you aren't deserving of the fandom or you aren't good enough for it. And I don't necessarily feel that way, but there is a level of like, you know, shit, I started a collection. So like, if I don't get like, you know, the Xenomorphs or the Predators, you know, NECA makes like 300 different Predators. And I had to find a distinct moment where I was like, I'm not buying a clear Predator. If he's invisible, I can't see him. I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need it. I've bought 5-6 other Predator like figures. I've even bought multiple Predator fingers figures at a raised price because it was rare, so I could cut them up to build other Predator figures. Like, I built a Predinator, which is a Predator-Terminator hybrid.
Awesome.
Like,
oh, you guys, if you haven't seen that, check it out.
I gotta see that.
Yeah, it's a Predator with the endoskeleton inside of him, and he's all blown up. Like, his arm is Terminator arm, his chest is the Terminator chest, but the head and, like, part of his legs are Predator. And it was fun, but it's, like, that kind of thing that ropes you in to, like, I need the full set, or I need to have certain pieces that are unique. To me, that's what drives my collecting. It just piques the love you have for something every time you look at it.
So you must have loved that 90s Power of the Force collection, huh?
There were parts that I did like. I had a speeder bike with a scout trooper that I thought was so cool that I had that like displayed.
Han with Solo the bent with knees.
With the bent knees. Han Solo with them ripped ass pecs was not instilling any love in Star Wars for me.
You know, thinking back, I think something that helped you, because we talked about like your guys' wives, there's not a full-on understanding towards the collecting, but I think tell me if I'm wrong, Jen, but I think what helped you understand my sense of why I love collecting in general was the fact that you, when I met you, were collecting coach purses.
Whoa. I was
nerd. Kind of a different thing.
Yeah. But I don't think you realized you were collecting them.
Yeah.
But you had a shitload of coach purses.
Yeah.
That even I helped contribute to it at a certain point. I was like, oh, wait, she's going to love me if I buy her this purse. And like, I remember you got like 20, 30 purses. It's like, you got a collection. Right.
Well, now it's time to upgrade to Louis Vuitton.
No, I wasn't gonna go near Louis Vuitton store.
Thank God.
It was way above what I was ever gonna think dream of making at the time, but
because you use paycheck money to get these purses.
Yeah. I didn't have a side hustle. I was going to college and being stupid.
Nice.
Yeah, I was collecting different things because I was also like collecting I guess it's just all accessories, clothing accessories, hats and boots and crap like that. That's what we collect. But how I can appreciate all of this, I don't appreciate mess, but...
What is what?
It's a little bit of a clutter.
No, listen to her. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
It's a lot better than what it was like a month ago, but what I can appreciate, and it's something that I've always appreciated when it comes to comics and in general, is just the art.
Yeah.
It's always been about the art, because I'm an artist too, so it's just... If I see something that catches my eye, I'm like, oh, this is a pretty thing. I like the pretty thing and it's cool as fuck. Let's get the thing I don't know about. that's fine. Buy it. Buy it. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
My wife has a bunch of these Oliver plates from CB2. And they're these little tiny plates that have a cute little stick figure doing funny things with food. Like he's skiing with candy canes or he's sunbathing on a cucumber round. And it's pictures on plates. And she collected these. And we have so many. We have a cabinet full of them. And it's one of those ones that's like, I can't be hypocritical about it because I'm like, we have so many Oliver plates. And she's like, NECA toys. And I'm like, okay, fine. Okay, fine.
You're like, plates?
And I'm like Matt's wife with the lightsaber. I'm like, what are the plates? Do you put them out? Do you display? I was like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because when you put something on that plate, you go, oh, cute. What a cute little guy. And like, it took me a long time to come around to that. And it's good when you have somebody who can sort of appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I want to circle back something that you kind of, both of you have delved into a bit, which is how the comic book snaho just shaped your hobby, but your actual living. Because both of you are special effects artists. I imagine somewhere along the line, seeing the art from the comic books must have inspired you, plus obviously all of the movies you watched growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But art inspires. So seeing that art, it's like there must have been this moment where you see something in a comic book, you're like, I want to recreate that in real life. I want to turn that into reality. So in some way, it must have been an inspiration to be where you are now in your profession. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Actually, if you guys have seen the show, The Toys That Made Us, in the Star Wars episode, Yes. There's a guy, and now I don't remember what his title was or his expertise, but he was talking about why the guys like us who want to collect, why do we want to collect so hard? Why is it so important to us? And like the crux of it was, we're into something that does not exist, right? We fucking love the Millennium Falcon and Imperial Walkers because they don't exist. So there's like, we can't go out and buy the car. Like, you know what I mean? A guy who's into cars, you could get that car. A guy who's into sports stuff, you can get memorabilia from the sports. We just have toys and comics and books and art to collect. And that's as close as we can get to getting the Millennium Falcon or getting, you know, name it, a lightsaber or something. So,
yeah.
You know, I think we're so passionate, and this is kind of, I'm paraphrasing him as opposed to quoting him, but it's almost like I'll never actually have a lightsaber. So I got to get all the lightsaber things that I can just to get as close as you can. And I think you're right, George. I never really thought about it, but working in the industry, that's like one extra step where, like, sadly, I haven't worked on any Star Wars movies. I've worked on like 3 or 4 comic book movies, but only one that I kind of care about. And it was before I was into comics. So I didn't even realize how cool what I was doing was at the time. But it is kind of cool to work in that realm with the things that you love, or at least as part of the same, I don't know, machine that cranks that art out.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been obsessed with zombies forever. I love zombies. I made zombie movies in college, made zombies movies with Matt. We've worked on makeup for zombie movies together. And I was a fan of, like, I walked into my comic book shop looking for zombie stuff. And this guy was like, you have to read The Walking Dead. And I was hooked. And suddenly 13 years later, I'm working on The Walking Dead as the VFX supervisor. And that, like, being able to translate that. And it wasn't like I went for that job. That all came around through ridiculous circumstances. But it's like being able to work on something and to try and create frames from the comic book. Like, well, they'll show me a picture and like, can we make this happen? And I'll go, hell yeah, we can make it happen and try and figure that out. And that's just super fun. And really, I mean, like, dream job's a big word. It's certainly a job. It's very hard, but it could not have a more perfect job suited for what I do and what I love.
Yeah, for sure. I know for me, that's always been a big deal. Like,
yeah,
I've always been drawing since probably the day I came out of the womb. Probably had a pencil in my hand.
And I was drawing out with you?
Yeah, well, I had to stab my leg out.
I like that.
Yeah.
Sounds like my kind of birth.
Using the placenta fluids as like
inks. Exactly. Yeah. So you've been there.
Yeah.
So like for me, once I got into comic books, like that definitely was an inspiration. Like, and I've always loved the style of comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And once it got to a point working for Famous Monsters and American Gothic Press, like having that ability to be editing art and creating, like, for us, like, we, like, you were at the panel, you guys moderated for us, and you got to hear about little things I got to do, like getting to actually talk to other artists and relate ideas with each other, create characters, create story and structure and all that stuff. Like, it was just fun. Like, I got to be at my desk at the day where I'm editing a podcast half of the day, and the other half of the day, I'm just drawing. I'm just at a desk drawing. Like, that's like, to other people who work in businesses, like whether they're lawyers or doctors, are like, so you do a child's job. It's like, no, I'm doing a job still. You know?
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe, like, I'm getting paid for this? Someone just paid me to recreate Superman in a horror book?
That's so cool, man.
It's like, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah. But I think it definitely reflects and translates into your work when you have like this affinity for whatever you're working on already.
Yeah.
Something that I find super unfair about collecting, though, is I feel like as I get older, I can see through the curtain of what they're trying to get me to do. And like, especially just now, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Ghostbusters. Obsessed. Wore costumes all the time. I wanted to be Egon Spengler. I had the backpack, the blue backpack, plastic backpack. I watched the TV show. I had all the toys. And now it's like they're re-releasing those same original toys in replication packages. And it's like, I had all that crap. And I'm like, guess I'm going to have to buy it again. I'm like, wait, no. Don't buy it again. Just remember how much you loved it the first time. And if you go on eBay, you can find packages of them for like $10. There's no need to rebuy all the stuff that I had again just because it's shiny and new. And like, fighting that intuition has been horrible, because there's a part of me that's like, yes, I need all those Ghostbusters again. And then you're just like, no, that's just ridiculous.
Dude, I thought the same thing about those same exact figures, because I had the same reaction. Oh, cool. And then I was like, no. I don't need to buy everything again. And I said the same thing with you. It's like, I'd rather dig up the old Kenner figures and try to find those than to buy the new versions, which I think they want me as a collector to be happy, but they also want my money.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why I don't have Arnold Schwarzenegger in Heat Vision as a NECA.
I think I had that same struggle with myself when like the Thundercats had that happen with them in the He-Man line. And I wanted to get them. Like Super 7, I think, had done some redos, and NECA's done it. Yeah. I think Mezco also have done a bunch of reissued figures. And I battled with myself. I was like, I kind of want that because it reminds me of what I had when I was a kid. Like, all those toys got destroyed or lost or whatever. And now the deal that I've had with myself, it's like, no, as I have grown and matured, I need my toys and stuff to grow and mature with me. So like, I bought like the sideshow version of the Thundercats. So I have like a sideshow Lion-O and Mum-Ra. And it's like, that's what I got to get. Cause like, they look now mature, like they're detailed. Just like, I'm a detailed human being.
But you can't pose them like fight each other.
That's true.
That is true. And that disappoints me.
That Mum-Ra.
Don't make me backtrack on my thoughts.
See, this is why I'm no help.
Oh man, that Mum-Ra sideshow Mum-Ra is the boss though. That thing is so nice.
I was actually just like readjusting it before we got on tour, like earlier.
So
I love them.
Like I said,
they make me happy.
I work on The Walking Dead, and I work with some people who, let's just say, they have a little expendable money. You know, they've been working in the industry for years, and they get these auction books brought to set of big Hollywood auctions. And in them, I kid you not, one of them was the Death Star 2 from Return of the Jedi for like $70,000. And those are the things they're contemplating. And this giant auction book is like, I'm looking through it, my mouth's just watering at the stuff that they have. It's like the original M1A1 gun from Jaws that he was going to shoot, you know, smile, you son of a bitch, he's going to shoot the scuba tank with. Like, that stuff for sale for thousands and thousands of dollars. And I'm just there to like, try and egg these people on. I'm like, do it. You should put money on that.
You used to do that to me.
I know.
When I came back from I Am Legend, you were trying to get me to buy a cabinet video game, remember? Lethal Enforcers or Sniper Scope. You were like, yeah, you should buy that. That'd be cool in here.
I mean, Sniper Scope would
do. I think I was like, nah, you should get a pinball machine instead. And you're like, why? And I was like, because I want to play a pinball machine, not Lethal Enforcers. But I love trying to get people to buy something that's way too expensive and something incredible, though, because I just want to see it. I want to touch it. And then you get invited to their house. You're like, wow, look at this like creature from the Black Lagoon you bought. Thank you. Thank you so much for letting me see it and touch it. Can I hug it? Would that be bad for it? Can I hug it?
I finally got to turn the tables. I finally got the turn of the tables on you at the auction at the comic book Legal Defense Fund auction at Comic-Con. Was it 3 years ago? I finally got you to buy some 28 Days Later art, right? Some original comic art.
Yeah, I accidentally bought a 28 Days Later page. Well, it's so like...
sure, I know. It just happened. Could happen to anybody. It was an accident, right? You tripped, slipped on the floor, and accidentally stuck your dick in my wife.
Dude, they talk fast, man. So, you know, you're at the auction, they're like, $25, and you're like, and then you put up this paddle and he's like, $75. And I was like, that's what I want. And then I didn't bring my hand down fast enough because he went $7,500. I was like, wait, what? And suddenly I was in for $100 and I sold for like $115. But then like, once you're in, you're like, well, I mean, if it's $100, $15 more, what's the difference? Why not? Okay, fine. And so I bought it. So I have this cool, like 28 days later and all these vampires are running towards the comic book frame. It's a cool piece. I like it.
Nerd.
I say, you talking about that auction book reminds me of a while back. I used to work at a comic book shop for about 5-6 years or so.
Yeah.
And the partner of my friend who owned the shop, he actually had an auction thing. Was it Premier Props?
Yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah.
And he would often bring things into the store to store it there.
Yeah.
And so we would have things like the original, like, Xenomorph head with like the skull in there and everything, and it was just like on our counter just waiting to be transported to its next place.
And you're just staring at it like
Yeah, it's like no one touch, stay away. Oh, man. But we get like the coolest shit coming to our shop because of that.
Yeah, when I used to work in practical effects with Matt before I jumped on the digital train, it'd be so cool to like see this stuff in corners that you're like, wait, that's from that movie that I love. Or like once this guy had this little, it was a tiny miniature like office chair with a computer monitor tied to it with like electrical cord. And I was like, what is that? And he goes, that's from Die Hard. That's the chair and the computer that he throws down the elevator shaft with the C4 to cause the explosion. And I about lost my mind. That was the cool. It's so
that's
cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's always the amazing thing. Like when you're on sets for things, and you like you'll see a prop on the side. Like, oh yeah, that's just a prop from this movie from like 10 years ago. And it's like this big movie, and it's just lying around. Like it's whatever.
Collecting.
Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah.
Well, now we're coming to the end of this.
Hit me with it.
Being that we all come from a horror background.
Yeah.
You know, we worked at Famous Monsters. You guys have done special effects, and it's just within our fandom lives.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be really cool if we played a little bit of there's this game called Super Fight. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. We're going to flip it on its head a little bit here. Usually the combatants will go against each other, but I thought it'd be really cool if we take two horror icons and we just decide who gets the most kills.
Okay. Yeah, I was like,
I'm on board. Let's do this. Yeah, let's make it happen.
So since you guys know each other so well, and I'm pretty sure you get into the best debates, as I've been a part of them already, we'll let the two of you duke it out. I'm going to shuffle some cards here.
Actually, yeah, I'm buying it.
That sounds like
it.
Shuffling happened, right?
Man.
You didn't see him. He dropped like 5 cards.
Edit that out.
No, you leave it in.
So we'll go up with Matt first. I'm going to pull your card, Matt. You have a half man, half fly monster.
Okay.
So you have the fly.
That's a good choice.
Yeah. And I'll be nice. I'll let you choose. Do you want the original black Goldblum and white version, or you want the Jeff Goldblum version?
Oh, yeah. He's going to puke on people and stuff. It's going to be great.
Then draw a card, any card. This will be for Aaron.
Dun, dun, dun. Mrs. Ooh. Voorhees.
Oh, Friday the 13th, part one. Okay.
So your prey will be the teenagers from A Nightmare on Elm Street, part 3, perfect. The Dream Warriors.
Oh, shit.
As a reminder to people out there, if you don't remember this movie, that means you have a kid in a wheelchair who is a wizard. So they're going to have their powers from the dream world. We're going to give them their powers. All right. You have a girl who has gymnastic abilities.
So a gymnast.
A gymnast. This is important to be specific. All right. You have a...
It's a gymkhana. Oh, man.
It's not gymkhana. Oh,
that's the power I want.
We have a punk badass who is wielding 2 switchblades.
Right.
Okay.
We have a strong man and a silent boy who has the power of loud voice.
Man, now I know what I gotta watch tonight after we get off this call.
And your location shall be an abandoned shopping mall. So in turn, this means that they also, and you guys, have access to whatever things at a shopping mall, like hardware stores and clothing places now, or whatever.
I will say this right off the bat. I think that Pamela Voorhees has a slight advantage to get on the board early. Now, I'm not going to say when, but I think what will get her on the board early is that the teenagers are not aware that she is a danger to them. Whereas if they see Rundle fly, they're like, oh shit, mutant fly man, and they'll run the other way.
At the end.
So to that end, they're like, but at the beginning, they'll be like, hey, old lady. And she'll be like, oh, hi. And the second they're not looking, bam, shit.
I was going to say, they'll see her and they'll be like, oh, it's just you. What are you doing out here? And then the music will go, dun 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 dun. Hey, can you help us? We're running away from this fly. Yeah, I think you're right. Although I think you're underestimating or you're jumping the gun with Brundlefly and just assuming he's the end of the movie Brundlefly already. He was not Brundlefly the whole time. He slowly got there, right? So we got some time where he's sexy Brundlefly, where he can seduce the ladies with the super couch sex.
Matt, let me tell you one word. Cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Well, before we get too hardcore into this now, Jen, you have a timer. So each of you will have a minute to state your case on who gets the most kills. And then we will judge. Jen's really good at finding a clock on her phone.
I opened a calendar.
That's kind of a clock.
She's going to give you the year.
I'm going to give you a whole year to duke this out.
Prepare yourself for the longest podcast ever.
I've been prepping for this my whole life.
A minute?
1 minute. I think 1 minute's.
Yeah.
They're bright, man.
Who's going first?
Ladies first, rooms. Go for it.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
Round one. Fight.
All right. Pamela Voorhees, I think, as I said, I think she has a good get on the board first strategy. She is going to lure the teenagers into a sense of false security because she is an old lady. They don't think she's a threat. And then when they have their backs turned or she can separate them, boom, I think she has Wheelchair Kid immediately. Even though he's a wizard, even if he found out that Pamela Voorhees was evil or threatened, if she took him out second, even if he was confronted by her true nature, I don't think Wheelchair Kid is getting away from her. Sorry, Wizard Boy. I think she has the gymnast down too, because she can be like, oh, my granddaughter's a gymnast too. And then while she's talking, the second she's like, what's over there? I can't see so good. She turns her head, bam, whoosh, machete to the face. Strong Guy might have some trouble because I don't think he gives a shit about Granny, man. That guy was it.
Oh, damn.
Wow, that was the minute.
Minute goes so fast.
Can I give a 5 second wrap up?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think even 30 seconds would be fair.
Yeah. Was it five kids or six kids? How many were there?
Well, you took out so far wizard, gymnast. You're about to take out strongman.
With the strongman, and I think she has to do it as a trap. I think she has to catch him in something or inside the mall. I think she has to go to the paint store at the mall and chopping mall his ass with like turpentine and paint and blow him up. And I think it'd be pretty tricky, but I think overall, the fact that she does not look threatening will really work to her advantage. And I think she's got this in the bag.
A lot of these kids are just trying to shop for like school supplies and then pin their voices over here like, fuck you.
We never even knew your kid after.
But if you think about it, like 12 movies worth of kids could say to her, right? Like theoretically.
Well, one movie worth could say to her. 12 movies of sequels could be like, we didn't even know your mom.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good, Rumi, but that's wrong.
All right. Clock is
nice
set.
Try.
You would say that. That's your job.
She has a more clandestine approach, but it doesn't friggin' matter. I think that's going to slow her down. Whereas Brundlefly has abilities. She was a good killer in the first movie, but Brundlefly has the throw up. He's super strong. He can walk on walls. He can fly eventually. And the walking on walls is going to help great because every mall I've ever been to is more than one story. So even if the kids try to run, he'd be able to go whoop, 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 whoop right up that wall. Doesn't matter if he's super sexy Goldblum, who's able to get Gina Davis in bed. And when I say bed, I mean his couch. I think he'll be able to seduce some of these young teenage girls who don't know any better. They're just trying to go to Claire's or Forever 21, whatever young women do these days. And he's just going to chomp. He's going to chomp them up, no problem. Or impregnate them with larva, which I think counts as a win. And they're still a victim if they get impregnated by a larva. I think that counts as a victim. Was that his bell? And I got a 30-second wrap-up.
That was the bell.
That was the bell, yeah.
Super strong. I'm not even going to say he needs the teleportation pods as a weapon, but if he was able to get those, he's turning kids inside out. I don't care what powers they have. He wasn't that great at gymnastics. The girl with the switchblades was a junkie. There's a lot of things going wrong with these kids, and I think there's a lot of triggers in the mall that would also aid in their dispatch. So there's no contest in my mind.
Sound argument.
So, Jen, I decided earlier you'd be the judge.
But you're here too, so you can judge Drew.
Yeah, but a split decision doesn't help. So you have the option of 30-second closing argument, unless you have a clear winner.
I guess if we're going based on, Matt brought a good point with, the speed in which things would play out, I would have to give it to the fly.
See what the audience has to say?
What audience?
Why are you always naysaying me? First you tell people I dropped the cards, so everyone knows there's no audience.
But you looked at your short boxes of the two Colossus heads that are just sitting there.
I got a Gobo from Fraggle Rock looking at us too. Everything counts.
Okay.
And it seems half man, half fly is the winner.
You win.
Good job, Matt. That's pretty good argument. I enjoy. Is that the Super Fight Horror Pack? I need to get it.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah,
Matt. We should do that all the time. Changing podcast, guys. You heard it here first. No longer Launchpad Podcast. We're just doing Super Fights.
Believe it or not, this was an idea that was kind of like we went back and forth on this.
Yeah, we did.
Because Jen was not on board for a while.
That's great.
She was like, that's not how it's going to work. Because you know what it is? We play this game a lot with our friends.
Yeah.
And battles can get heated and go for hours just on one set of cards.
I feel like I walked away at one point during you guys were arguing about something and I was just like, I'm tired.
Well, I know there was an argument we had where I think the debate was...
Oh, I can't remember.
I think I remember it because Godzilla was in it. It was Godzilla and whatever character I had. Uh-huh. And my character was human and theirs was Godzilla. And we had a stipulation card where it was they had to... one of them had to win a singing competition. And I'm like, oh, well, my character wins because it can have the possibility of being able to sing. Godzilla only goes spreeonk. There's no singing there. It doesn't have the capability to do so. And we're going back and forth on that. Jen went to the bathroom, came back. And she's like, this is still going?
That's hysterical.
So I think there was that fear that was going to happen here.
I was like, we need to
Rumi put and I are like, we're you and I rooms, we like either usually agree right out of the gate and we agree hard, whether it's yay or nay. But the times we don't agree, I would argue with you and debate with you longer than I would about bills and the baby with my wife. Like a man is like, no, we really shouldn't feed him this. Eventually I'm like, fine, I don't care. But if she was if she was like Daredevil and Matt Murdock would be no match for Predator, I would be like, wait a minute. Hold on one second.
See, and I think we're a good, it depends on your guests. I think you picked a good batch of guests to do this game with because Matt and I think we could play that game quite a bit. So that was fun.
Yeah, it was good.
That was really fun.
So reoccurring segment it is. Yes.
Yay.
Well, I gotta say, guys, it has been a pleasure having you with us.
Hit us up. Where can people follow you? Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at LaunchpadPod and our website, launchpadpod.com. We release every Wednesday. You can listen to us on your favorite podcatcher, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, whatever you listen to good podcasts like this one, Baby Rodeo, we'll be there too.
And George has been on a couple times. We were on the Famous Monsters podcast a couple times with you, but George has come on our show in a couple times. You've come on more than once to our show, right, George? Halloween, which was freaking great. I don't remember. I don't even remember if that was ours or Famous Monsters.
Yeah, I can never remember which one it is either, but yeah, I think it was. The FM one. It's always great talking horror, talking geek shit with like-minded people. And while we've met each other, obviously we met each other, but we obviously didn't grow up in the same area, same part of the world.
Oh,
but
yeah. Hell,
man, if we knew each other as kids, we would have been best friends.
And I want to hang out with your friend who's afraid of E.T. because I feel like I would have fuck that kid up.
Oh, ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Hold on, people. Oh, my God.
Marcel, oh, it's like a big deal. We, yeah, yeah. Marcel.
Wait, did I never tell you this story?
No.
All right. Okay, real quick before we give our social media stuff. Hey. So I have a friend, Marcel, which you know.
Yeah.
All right. Apparently growing up, he was afraid of the movie E.T. Like, that alien scared the shit out of him.
Aww.
And so once we found this out, this became a tool for us.
I bet. Yeah. You guys are terrible.
Yeah. So you know how my dad always had a big screen TV in every place we lived. So ahead of time, like, he knew we were coming.
Oh,
and he got the movie. He paused it right at the part where, like, he's, like, right in front of the camera, yeah. Deep,
yeah.
Deep, like, up front close, uh-huh. And the finger and everything. And we have bring Marcel in, and we turn him around, and then, bam, he sees it right there. He's like, and he screams, and he ran out of the
room. Oh, my God.
To make this better, we're, like, 17, yeah, 18 years old.
Yeah.
Me and him and friends, like, we're 15, 16 years old. So, like, we're practically adults. And this grown kid ran. And, oh, my God, it's the best. Marcel Fishtons, I'm sorry. Everyone knows now. Grant, I think I've told this now on two podcasts. But it's worth telling twice.
Yeah.
But in any case, if you want to follow us, the Beaver Rodeo, you can hit up Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr. But Jen, where can they follow you?
I'm Lazarus Trashker on Twitter and Instagram.
And of course, you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter at Nekolopolis. That's Nekolopolis. As always, keep slapping.
What are you doing? Looking for beavers.
Hey, you see that?
My dick's asleep.